Welcome to Risk Revolution, a podcast series that examines all aspects of risk management in the life sciences industry. We'll talk to industry experts on best practices for identifying risk, assessing risk, measuring solutions, implementing solutions, and monitoring results. Here are your hosts, Nuala Callinan, Valerie Mulholland, and Lori Richter.
Well, welcome back to Risk Revolution, our monthly series seeking to advance the maturity of risk management practices across the life science sector. We cover topics that challenge professionals within the biopharmaceutical and medtech industries and aim to shake up the paradigm to revolutionize the ways in which we perceive and proactively manage risk. Now, for episode 22, we are looking at the role of culture and behaviors in leading high-performing teams and delivering enhanced performance. Or the short version of that is, how do we engage the front line to deliver on the bottom line? And Val and I are back behind the microphones, attempting to revolutionize risk management. And for this one, I have had the most wonderful opportunity to reconnect with a very dear colleague of mine who I worked with as the co-lead for the industry volunteer group drafting the ISPE's cultural excellence report over 10 years ago. We're not counting, though. Now, as it happened, this person also worked with Lori in a former life. And speaking of Lori, this month's podcast is just a double hander, as Lori is busy getting ready for a live performance next week. Val, tell us where Lori is off to.
Yeah, Lori gets all the glamorous gigs, I'll have to say. So she is speaking at the upcoming PDA week in Palm Springs in the US. She'll be part of a session, I think it's focusing on proactive QRM. I think it's on the Tuesday, the 8th. And she is talking about something she's passionate about. Wait till you hear, Nuala. Quality risks are business risks. Integrating QRM for strategic success. You know, that's our baby. So listen, if any of our listeners are planning to go there, please do catch up with Lori. Tell her what you think of the podcast. Only if it's complimentary, of course. And any ideas that you might have for future topics or future guests, you know, please do find her. Listen, who is this dear colleague you're talking with this month, Nuala?
Yeah, I'm delighted to say that we're bringing you a pioneer within the industry in terms of how to switch on, as he says, our organizations to proactively manage risk and continuously improve processes. And he does this by focusing on culture, where mindsets, behaviors and employee engagement, we'll get into that, deliver real improvement. So we have Mr. Matt Pearson, who is the VP of Quality System and Risk Management at Guardant Health. And Val, you've had a listen. What are your initial thoughts on what Matt shared about how they have integrated their quality systems with risk management and continuous improvement programs by using culture to improve performance and reduce risk?
Yeah, I loved how Matt outlined how all this worked. And because, you know, I also kind of often reflect that an organization's quality culture, you know, mirrors its risk maturity, where teams feel psychologically safe, they're more likely to share bad news early. And, you know, arguably the most valuable data in risk-based decision-making is good news early, or bad news early, rather, you know. Listen, Nuala, I don't know Matt personally, but am I right in saying that he started sort of in the finance business end of our industry and wound his way to quality systems and quality risk management through OpEx? You know, that's such an interesting journey. And I found when I listened, it kind of... Matt brings with him a very fascinating perspective. So let's take a listen to the first part of your interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's listen ahead now. Well, today we have Matt Pearson, an old friend of mine, and I'm so delighted that you're here with us today, Matt. And I guess really what we're talking about today is the role of culture and behaviours in leading high performance teams, and more importantly, not just leading the teams, but delivering that enhanced performance. And I regularly refer to this as about engaging the front line to deliver on the bottom line. Interestingly, your current role is as Vice President of Quality Systems and Risk Management at Guardant Health. And I really love that your role straddles not only the quality systems, but also continuous improvement and risk management, which I see very much as two sides of the same coin. I'm dying to hear you tell us a little bit more about, you know, your organization and how you view this cohesion in your role and how important it is.
Well, Nuala, thanks for the opportunity to chat today, and I really appreciate your time. It is a special opportunity to have the worlds of quality and continuous improvement and risk management aligned. So I've been in roles where they're separated, but I really have a special opportunity here at Guardant to really combine those. It's kind of the best of all worlds. So, you know, based on my experience, I've seen that, you know, quality culture, continuous improvement, employee engagement are really all part of the same opportunity to turn your organization on and elevate productivity to improve quality outcomes. The more I've learned about quality culture, you know, through the years, the more I see these topics as having synergies that really should be leveraged as much as possible to make the most impact, rather than trying to tackle them as independent objectives. You know, we see many companies stating their desired corporate behaviors and values. However, they lack holistic approaches and programs to make them sustainable or a reality. We often see many running these employee engagement programs, which, you know, we're trying to engage and retain talent. And then we have continuous improvement programs that are sometimes siloed at the department level or at the team level, but rarely holistic across the whole organization. And then others are launching, you know, quality culture programs. You and I have had many talks and efforts around quality culture programs in the pharma, biotech, and medical device areas. And, you know, if we look at these, if you align them, they really have very similar intents to really hone employee behaviors for optimal quality outcomes. So I guess my premise would be is I think by making these activities more aligned, we can have more impact. It makes it easier for the employee to navigate, understand, and also for leaders to role model and to message. So that's my bias. I do have to disclose that I'm a continuous improvement fan. I have had previous experience as a Six Sigma black belt. We spend quite a bit of time working on lean concepts these days. But that, with that said, you know, I think when it comes to quality culture and effort, you know, I would say that if you want to start by defining what you're really after and what the culture is the first step that I'd recommend anybody that wants to turn their organization on and look at how they can align these different programs for those results.
And I love that you say, you know, you've got to define the problem, you know, back to the old Lean Six Sigma days,
yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, very often we end up, we're solving for the wrong problem, not only in approaching to change our culture, but we, you know, we even down to, you know, if we're looking at continuous improvement or you know, prevention around a known corrective action that we have coming down the track, very often we can find that the reason they haven't got to root cause is they didn't start in the right place in the first instance. So one of the things that I like to talk about with teams is about that golden hour concept. You know, if there is an issue has arisen, or if there is, let's go to where the problem is. Almost like in the healthcare setting, you know, your outcomes are much better if you can get to the team within the first golden hour. And I don't mean 60 minutes there. You know, it can be 6, 48, 72 hours. But, you know, otherwise the knowledge and the information about what problem we're trying to solve for can seep away. And certainly when we're trying to solve for a culture problem, it can be very nebulous. People are not clear on what that means. It you know, it's not very concrete for people, which is why the behaviors, I think, is, you know, much more tangible and measurable.
Right. So, yeah. So when we think of, you know, continuous improvement, we think of engagement and we think about risk management, and we think about quality. We're really trying to roll it into the same, you know, umbrella, connecting dots for people and seeing how they align. And we've been pretty successful at being able to see improved engagement by getting people involved in continuous improvement and risk-based decision-making, really empowering people to make changes to their organization and driving proactive quality.
Yeah. So let's start by then, you know, help us. You know, as I've said, it can be very nebulous and it's not very concrete. Tell me what your, you know, definition is of what do you understand quality culture to be?
Sure. Having done this in a few different organizations now, I think just stepping back and defining what you're really trying to do, what is it that you're after? Many people will say, well, I'll know it when I see it. But I do think we have to press ourselves to really come up with a firm definition for our organizations. I think of the Henry Ford, comment about, quality is doing the right thing when nobody's looking. I mean, that's kind of what we're looking for at the end of the day. But the way I define quality culture is where employees at all levels are actively engaged in learning. They're continually improving processes. They're proactively involved in the quality of their products and services and in improving those. It's a culture that's constantly growing and learning. So we'll talk a little bit about growth mindset. Carol Dweck has a book out around mindset. And mindset is really a key when it comes down to really thinking about what we can do to make quality better for the organization.
I'm
That's
just
something that we utilize quite a bit.
I'm going to jump in there because I do want to come back to the mindset. But the other term that I find that people get really wary of, and you used it right there. And I, by the way, I love that you're saying it's about building a learning organization, an organization that is continually focused on improvement and in alignment with the organization's values and goals. But I the you say actively engaged, where all, every employee is actively engaged in these endeavors. And that's the other term that I find that some people are really confused by. What does actively engaged, when we say engaged, what does that mean? What does that look like for your teams? Or what are the systematic processes? Because it doesn't just happen in the ether. You actually have to put structures in place whereby people can engage.
So there are different aspects of how we get people involved. So one, you want to identify improvement opportunities and help your team members to start identifying those improvement opportunities. But I always look at quality as we can't be static with quality. Quality has to be in action. It's not enough to maintain. We have to be improving. And I think if you're on the defensive and you're maintaining, you're not really getting the big picture. So this isn't about simply maintaining standards in an organization. And again, it kind of comes down to setting expectations with your team. So it's not enough just to maintain. It's not enough just to adhere to the regulations. We have to be we can't be reactive and fixing problems as they pop up. We have to be proactive, and we have to be looking into the future and saying, okay, what is it that we need to improve today? We got to get a little bit better each day. And I believe, quality needs to be proactive and not passive. And the words we use in, how we're describing what we want to do are important as leaders. So, if we're talking about maintaining, then people are going to maintain. If we're talking about improving, then they're going to adjust their behaviors and they're going to be more proactive in their actions. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that we try to advocate through our coaching, our communications, and just accountability tracking is really empowering folks to be more proactive. And it's a constant effort. It's easy to
Yeah,
fall
it is.
into a status quo. But when it comes down to whether it's metrics or it's projects, it's constantly looking and saying, what can we do to improve?
And I really think that's the key to it. Traditionally, quality, systems or quality units have been seen as, the maintainers of the standards of, holding the party line. But that has, led us to be a little change averse or risk averse. Perhaps it was because we weren't risk mature enough to be able to say we understand our processes and therefore we feel comfortable in approaching an improvement and understanding what problem we're trying to solve for. But again, I often use the term with the teams that I'm working with is that it's we've got to be acting as fire prevention officers rather than firefighters. Being firefighters all the time reacting is an exhausting way to do business, whereas if we're working on making sure all the fire hydrants are properly tagged and everybody, that the we're actively engaging with our community to make sure that we're looking at you know, how can we prevent and reduce risk. And that's why that's another thing about the importance of having continuous improvement, business excellence, operational excellence, whatever you want to call it, with the risk management team as well, and getting that a part of the culture together. Because, you know, in looking for opportunities for improvement in a regulated environment, you know, within the life science sector, I really believe that you shouldn't be engaging in a continuous improvement project if there isn't a measurable reduction in risk, whether that's risk to quality or risk to availability of medicines. If you're not reducing a potential risk or likely hazards or a series, or reducing the likelihood of them occurring, or eliminating them altogether, then why are you engaging in that continuous improvement activity? And that's where I see a lot of these cost-driven continuous improvement activities that, you know, can end up cutting corners and they come back to bite you afterwards. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that we wouldn't necessarily be looking at yield or, you know, cycle time reduction. They're all valid ways of looking at improvement for the business. But within this quality culture, I firmly believe that what's good for the patient is good for the business. And unless we're able to see, well, if we're going to make these changes, what does that give us back? Does that reduce our exposure to a particular set of hazards or risks? And are we likely to be more robust, less variation in our system, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I think it's worth stopping here at this point to really consider how Matt defined what quality culture is for him and his organization. And I loved the way he says, you know, it's a culture where employees at all levels are actively engaged in learning, continuous improvement, and proactively improving the quality of products and services in alignment with the organization's values and goals. And what does engagement look like in that everyday environment? I think he's given us some really, you know, tactical, concrete examples of what this concept of, which is often, as I said, quite abstract in terms of how they engage their employees and the, you know, the standard work processes that they use within that. And I think it's interesting, you know, because he highlighted there that all too many quality organizations operate in a much more static or reactive mode about, you know, simply maintaining the standards or adhering to the regulations. And that can lead us to being much more reactive and fixing those issues and not proactive with quality. And as Matt says, you know, he says that means we're missing the boat on quality culture when we observe that kind of static approach. So what about you, Val?
Yeah, I agree with you. I was also struck on how Matt, you know, called out the structure of an organization and how it can lead to things like fragmentation of effort or overloading employees in terms of the number of programs or initiatives they have to engage with. That gave me a lot of food for thought. And I liked the fire prevention metaphor, you know, that effective QRM can turn a Kappa into a data-driven foresight system. If we're treating the same deviations every quarter, Nuala, we're not managing risk. We're just documenting it. So those were the thoughts that struck me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the next section that Matt brings in two of his key influencers, and one of those, Shane Craddock, another Irishman, as I've mentioned in the interview with him, you know, it took a Californian to introduce me to Shane's work on the mindset performance loop. And Matt also talks about Carol Dweck and the growth mindset. So let's have a listen to that.
You know, I look at, you know, continuous improvement or what we're talking about with quality culture, again, synonymous, is you're really trying to turn the organization on. You're trying to empower the organization. And you know, we've looked at Shane Craddock's mindset loop model over time. In this model, you know, it illustrates really how culture is a generative result of mindset, attitude, and behaviors. And I think the opportunity with that model is to really think about how do you leverage that as like the incubator of, you know, continuous improvement and quality in an organization. And the nice thing about that model is you don't have to start with the big bang approach. It's at the individual and team level, because what you're doing is you're generating, you know, the right mindsets through experience. Yeah. And the model, I'll just walk you through the model real quick. New mindsets create new attitudes. New attitudes then lead to new behaviors. And those new behaviors lead to new actions. They generate new actions. And those new actions deliver new results and performance. And in turn, those new results and performance create a new experience and generate a new mindset. And that model is circular. It can be either in the positive or the negative. Now, of course, we want to go in the positive direction. So we want to create these positive generative experiences for our people to where they see that they're empowered, they can make changes, and they can make improvements that are significant to quality outcomes. We use this model quite a bit within the team in how we shape our experiences. So we use Kaizen quite a bit. We don't go over the top with a lot of terminology. We try to make it easy and simple for people to understand. But you know, just the concept, you know, we're borrowing from the knowledge of many other colleagues out there and using that to really shape. And then building on the piece of growth mindset, really thinking about how do we leverage growth mindset and the opportunity to learn, you know, all the time. Versus a fixed mindset. So that's one of the concepts there. There's the fixed mindset and there's the growth mindset. The growth mindset is the belief that you can do anything with the right amount of effort and practice. Whereas the fixed mindset is more like, well, you've got what you've got and you just got to play the cards you have. You can't make a change to the deck. What we've been really trying to do is encourage people to see, hey, we can have a growth mindset and you can develop it. And I mentioned Dr. Carol Dweck, an author of a book around mindset. We use that quite a bit just from a standpoint of trying to ground people on what growth mindset is, what fixed mindset is. But I think she points out, one of the things that she points out in her research is that, you know, when you have growth mindset in your organization, and growth mindset would be similar to a learning organization, right, is the team members are going to be more able, more capable to overcome failures and setbacks as they occur. They're going to seek out and crave challenges, right? And they're going to try new things. And this is what I'd refer to as quality in action, right? Yeah. So those are the things we're after versus the fixed mindset would be the opposite. You don't want people running away from the challenges. You don't want them avoiding issues. You don't want them sticking with the status quo. Right. Yeah. Again, it's all about quality and action. So that's what we try to do on a daily basis. And again, it doesn't have to be the big bang approach. Small incremental improvements over time add up and they make a significant change in behavior and empowerment and engagement. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. And, you know, it's funny. It took a California colleague, as in you, to introduce me to another Irishman's the Mindset Performance Loop from Shane Craddock, who is also a fabulous podcaster and author. I use his work all the time. And like you, I mean, we included this on your recommendation in the 2017 ISP Cultural Excellence Report, this image, and Shane gave us the permission to include it in the guide. And I like you, I use it all the time. The importance of you can't just beat the new performance at the end of the loop unless you focus on changing those, getting the right mindset, changing the attitudes to can do. I like you say, that craving opportunity, that curiosity about, I wonder, can we improve this? And then that leads to the new behaviors and the new actions. And it's funny, you know, when I talk to teams, I'm saying actions are things you do and things you say. So we can get really concrete about actions, you know, because we can observe them. We can see them in action, like you say, that quality in action. And the behaviors drive our actions. But of course, as you noted there, that, you know, we want to use this model to drive that positive change. But often it's acting as an undertow in our organization where the wrong mindset is there and the wrong attitudes, and it's pulling against the opportunity to implement continuous improvement or you know, proactive risk management. And in those cases, I say we end up with the results and the performance that we deserve rather than the ones we desire in terms of you know, what we wanted to. But so moving on then, Matt, in terms of really some key concepts or key enablers to this culture change, I'm interested to hear what, you know, what you've boiled this down to in terms of must-haves if you're going to try and implement this, because it's not just about the talk. You got to do the walk and make it real. Yeah. So what are those enablers for you?
Yeah, I think once you've defined, you know, what you're after, you're looking for that learning culture, the continuous improvement and the proactive. I think most companies are pretty good about stating their values and their behaviors. Now it's about, you know, what are the enablers to help enforce those, those values and behaviors and really, you know, support them, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing that I've seen that works is visual management. And, you know, it's a key component of your quality culture is making performance expectations really clear through metrics and visible to everybody in the organization. And this transparency to these visual metrics and dashboards really fosters accountability within the you know, individuals and teams. Mm. And that's important because you got to get to the individual level, right? We talk about the front line and, you know, it's winning the hearts and the minds of the front line. And in order to get that message across, it has to be a consistent message. They have to understand what's important. They got to know whether they're winning or losing. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, everybody should know how they're doing, you know, from a performance perspective, you know, to those visual metrics. So these visual metrics also communicate and reinforce performance expectations throughout time. So if the more consistent those are with those values, that's important. And I think that's important is the congruency of those visual metrics. What you're measuring matters.
Yeah.
Mindset matters. You know, people are very smart. They'll figure out what's behind the metric and how to work the metric. You just want to make sure that the metric's generating the desired behaviors. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's
not driving the wrong behaviors. Yeah.
Yeah. And organizations with strong quality cultures typically have well-defined measurable quality metrics that educate the team members on how they're doing, but also facilitate focus and urgency on problem areas. And they actually motivate corrective or preventive actions to solve them and improve them and make them go away. So, you know, quality culture embraces improvement targets that trigger actions for improvement. One of the things I've seen before is, you know, some people will overreact to red metrics. You know, quality cultures, you know, the leaders embrace the reds as opportunities for improvement. And, you know, ideally, you're continually looking to progress. So you should be adjusting those targets to continue to show that progression. So we typically will have things on our scorecard that are red. It's because those are the things we're working on. Those are the things we want to improve. But if you have just a green scorecard, you know, and it's green forever, then you're probably missing the boat from an opportunity to really drive what I call proactive quality. And, you know, these should be, like I said, the dashboard should be, the metrics should be iterative. They should be, you know, informative, and they should be, you know, an example of what the current business challenges are.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. Again, I know in the six dimensions of quality culture that we developed for within the ISPE team, you know, dimension four is those metrics that matter. And very often, you know, we find organizations where their quality metrics or even their performance metrics for the organization are at a level that the frontline teams can't see how they contribute to that. They can't see how their effort or their focused execution moves that KPI left or right, or red or green, or are we winning or losing? So I agree that at that local level, you know, whether it's at the tier meetings or, you know, where they have their tier boards or where they have their continuous improvement boards or shift huddles, it is so important that they can see what the expectation is, you know, in the current time frame that they're working in, you know, whether it's yesterday, today, tomorrow, or last week, this week, next week, whatever that window is, that they're really clear on, you know, that, you know, what their task is this week. And therefore, you can really identify, like you say, where the gaps are. You know, we don't want everybody coming along and saying, oh, we're in the green, so we don't have any concerns this week. There isn't anything going to jump out of the long grass. What you want is you want some reds there that are saying, you know, we've got some people out this week, or we've got some materials that haven't yet been approved for use, or, you know, we've got some, you know, maintenance concerns, or, you know, unless people are actually looking at those. And even doing that reflective practice, I find, you know, like a pre-mortem, you know, if particularly if we have batches that are not very frequent or products that are not very frequent, actually sitting down saying, how did the last time we ran this campaign or this batch go? What went wrong? What worked well? What do we need to do more of? And what didn't go so well? What do we need to do less of? And really boiling it down to those daily tactics. But I absolutely, they have to be clear on, are we winning or losing? And I love that you say we should not be afraid of the red. I think you and I have both seen organizations that spend a lot of time, you know, with their metrics jockeys on this, you know, on the spreadsheets, and they're polishing up the metrics to make them look green on the outside. I call them watermelon metrics, you know, but they're actually bright red on the inside. But for the purpose of the end of the month review, they've been polished up to make them look nice on the outside. So, and we don't learn anything then. There's no opportunity for learning then if we're pretending everything's fine, nothing to see here, move along, and hopefully somebody else falls under the bus instead of me at this week's this month's review. So what about enabler two then, Matt?
Another enabler would be around just having a standard accountability process, is what I refer to it as. And that's just really having structure and a system to ensure that everyone in the organization is accountable for following expectations, standard work, and, you know, improving their processes. So this is as simple as just making sure that there are clear norms and standards. It's pretty amazing how powerful just having a discussion and alignment and agreement within a team around standards and norms can really inspire improved performance within a team. And we often just assume that we know what the expectations are, but unfortunately, there's a lot of assuming. And with assuming, you know, it's not always accurate. So that's one of the first things, I think, is just making sure that you have clear standards and norms. There's agreement, there's alignment within the team. Everybody's got buy-in into that. And that's important for adult learners. They need to understand the why. Why do we have these rules? Why are we doing the things we're doing? And that's probably the other thing I would say from a quality perspective is, you know, we can't always run around with the regulatory stick or the quality stick and say, you have to do this. You know, we're dealing with adults and they want to know why. Right. And that's something we should be able to deliver to them, you know, rather easily. The second piece would be regular reviews, just to see, you know, how are we doing? And I'm talking about metric reviews. So these would be meetings to review performance targets, quality objectives, and focusing on addressing those issues. And I think that's another thing, just from a regular standard process, you're following that. We want to make sure that the team members and teams feel empowered, you know, so ownership is really key. We want to make sure that they understand the expectations and they're empowered to make those changes happen. We want to inspire every employee to own the quality of the work. One of the things that we try to say is quality is every employee's responsibility. It's not just the quality unit. It's every employee's responsibility to ensure quality for our customers. The fourth one would be just around problem solving, right? So encouraging continuous improvement through problem solving and standard problem solving approaches. These improvements don't have to be large cross-functional projects. And I think that's sometimes where organizations will get stalled, is they try to go too big. we're talking about small incremental improvements, things that are within the team's control, and these things can add up over time and make a significant impact on their experience, their mindset, and your culture, right? So I think it's also important not to just focus on perfection. This might be counter to a lot of colleagues in regulatory and quality is, you know, perfection sometimes the enemy of progress.
Yeah.
And so with these small incremental improvements that we're trying to make is we're really trying to get people to experiment within the regs and within, you know, the standards, but we don't want to wait for the perfect solution because the perfect solution ends up taking a lot of time. So what we try to do is we try to say, okay, let's try it. We'll iterate. So more of a growth mindset approach of, hey, we're going to give this a try. If it doesn't work, we'll make some adjustments. We'll keep adjusting. But the idea is over time, we're going to make more progress by doing the iterative approach versus waiting on that perfect solution.
Yeah. So, and I couldn't, again, I'm agreeing with you. And I love the fact that, you know, this whole standard processes and you talk about, you know, by applying these standard work processes, they become standard accountability processes that everyone is clear on what they're supposed to be delivering on. And you have standards and norms. Now, unfortunately, within the quality unit, we often think, well, we've got all these SOPs. And the number of times I've had to describe that standard work is not a standard operating procedure. And
correct.
Quite different in terms of how you approach a task, like you say, understanding the why. And these standard processes, you know, they can be simple, something as simple as a clear check sheet, a checklist of how do we start this job and who's going to be responsible and have we clearly defined who the ownership is with. And, you know, another thing that I have, because often you find in within teams, where there isn't cohesion, there's a bit of finger pointing on, well, they said they were going to get that done and, you know, they're not being accountable for their work. I've ended up using some of the references that I've received from other sources around being really clear in defining responsibility, you know, which is someone's put your name in a box to say, you know, Matt is going to, in the minutes of the meeting, Matt is going to take responsibility for that action. Ownership then, which is what you've talked about, empowering those individuals to take pride in their work and supporting them to do their best work, making sure they have all of the tools and standards and supports to do that and that they take pride in that. But then I refer to accountability not as a finger-pointing exercise, as a team sport. It is everyone else on the team's responsibility to see, is that individual faltering? You know, they stepped up for the job. They said they'd have it done by next Thursday. And they want to take pride in their work, but then they come in next week and they say, actually, I didn't get to it. Something else came up. We had a problem, blah, blah, blah. And accountability isn't pointing the finger either saying, oh, will we just pop it in for next Thursday then? Or saying, well, you said you'd have it done. So there's a problem that you didn't get it done. I see accountability as that team sport saying, okay, why did we think that you were well equipped to do this last week when you committed to Thursday? And why did we think Thursday was a good idea? And what do we need to do between this week and moving forward to make sure you are better positioned to complete this role, us as a team to support you in what you need, whether that's taking another piece of work off or redelegating, so that the accountability is if we see our friends and colleagues faltering or, you know, dropping the ball, that we're able to come in a supportive role, not in an accusatory role, and that they know that people have their back and therefore they're not kind of, you know, tempted to say, yeah, I'm on it and I'll have it for tomorrow. And you know that that's not going to be their best work, you know?
Yeah. You know, Nuala, one of the things that I think, you know, we struggle with when it comes down to accountability, just in general, is do we have agreement?
Yeah.
You know, the number one reason why, you know, accountability is typically avoided is it's, you know, usually, well, I didn't know. That's what we need to do. So I think one of the things is you're driving accountability in your culture is you want to have clarity on what the expectation is, and you want to have consistency in the ability to follow up on it. Mm. So a lot of this is, you know, it's kind of like with raising kids. You could tell your child one thing, but if you don't follow up and you're not consistent through time, they'll figure it out. right? And it's not going to stick. And then I think the other thing is the connectivity. It's kind of the why. Why is this accountability important? It's connecting to the business, connecting to the metrics, connecting to the patient or the customer in why this accountability is important. So that clarity, the connectivity, and the consistency work together in driving more, more accountability in the organization. And the processes help with the consistency.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So
systematic processes, that's my, my go-to, they're part of the engine by which, if we don't have a systematic process with a standard workflow that people are really clear about, then how on earth do we expect them to succeed? Well, I've always loved the work of Shane Craddock. And in fact, in the show notes, we must provide some links. And I use his mindset performance loop model all the time with teams. But in terms of Carol Dweck's work on mindset, I was really struck by Matt's insight on the cultural impact when a fixed mindset prevails, and how that can create an environment that can be quite destructive or competitive, leads to defensiveness. And again, that old chestnut of poor accountability, which seems to get blamed for everything, and fear of failure. As opposed to where, building this quality culture from a place of a growth mindset can really foster that collaborative environment where challenges are craved, as he says, are embraced, and the learning is continuous. So it really is, linking very much to Laurie's work around how do we build these learning organizations.
Correct. I couldn't agree with you more, Nuala. And, I'd love to see where dashboards, where they don't just track outcomes, but they show leading indicators of risk, especially risk signals that frontline teams can influence directly.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we need to be much more predictive rather than counting the poor outcomes. And that comes back to a model that you use regularly, Val, the bow tie model. Are we putting in those preventative controls to stop the horse from bolting, upstream of the risk event? Or are we simply putting in those mitigating controls, which accepts that the event has occurred, the failure mode has occurred, and we're now just backpedaling to try and manage the consequences, as you say. So I think at this stage, Matt has kind of saved the best to last. And he, based on his experience in a number of different organizations where he's rolled this, he's outlined the three critical enablers that he finds have to come together for anyone planning to implement sustainable culture change within their organization. So let's have a listen to Matt's wisdom on these enablers. Work. It brings us to enabler three, which is in many ways what we've spoken about in to date is really about how do we engage the frontline.
Yeah.
The third one that you talk about is leader standard work. And it's, for me, one of the most critical ones, because often we can get a lot of nodding and we can get a lot of lip service and we absolutely think this is a great idea and you guys should definitely go over there and change the organization. But we're fine yeah. from leadership, but we don't need to change.
This is the most important
critical element is this active sponsorship from top down. So I'm really interested to hear how do you get your mindset into your other leaders at the top of the organization to realize they have to step up.
Yeah. So the role of the leader is absolutely essential. So for the organization, the role modeling and the activities, the consistency, because again, it's like, I hear you saying this, but I'm going to watch, I'm going to see. And people, will make their opinions on whether it's going to happen based on what they see more than what they hear. So that's mm-hmm. really important. So the walking the talk is really a key aspect. And so one of my favorite tools is this concept of leader standard work. Mm-hmm. And leaders play such a critical role in establishing and nurturing a quality culture that it's important that all the leaders know and understand that they need to role model quality and continuous improvement behaviors. It's really important what they say, what they do, and how they act. Mm. They are helping create an environment of trust. They're helping create that learning environment, or they could be enforcing a fixed mindset or, you know, a more destructive culture where it's more competitive and political. So what you're really trying to do is you're trying to make sure that the leaders are walking the talk. And so the way that we do that is we use a tool called Leader Standard Work. And the way I look at this is it's like a playbook or a routine that a leader can follow to help them be more consistent in the activities that you're trying to do in the organization to change culture and behavior, drive continuous improvement, improve accountability, et cetera. So the key elements of Leader Standard Work include a daily routine. You know, it's just having a checklist of these are the activities that I'm planning for the day. And these routines can be very insightful in helping us be consistent, but also engage in the activities that we don't always get to as leaders, which could be coaching. It could be problem solving. It could be reflecting, you know, reflecting and planning. You know, are two things that sometimes we don't spend enough time doing. But just, you know, having your plan for the day and then at the end of the day, reflecting and saying, how did I do? And guess what? You're just one day away from getting back on your routine, right? So you go to the next day, you got your routine, you go back to your routine. So it's really a tool to help the leaders be more consistent, engaging the team, monitoring performance and driving improvements. And guess what? You have the tools available of that standard accountability process to be able to use. You've got those regular metric review meetings that you can, you know, be in and coach and mentor and drive problem solving. You have the visual dashboards or metrics that you can utilize. The other thing is what we refer to as GIMBA, right? This term that we'll liken from, you know, continuous improvement. But it's just the idea that GIMBA walks, go see and learn, go see where the work is done. Don't just stay in your office or, you know, at your cube, but get out and go see how things are actually working. Observe where the work is being done, engage with employees, understand what their frustrations are, and then help them feel empowered to solve and improve their processes where they needed to be. Another key aspect is really looking for opportunities for standardization. So we often, in high-tech environments, we often can be working in complicated work environments. And so I think the opportunity to always look for standardization or simplification is something that it's an art, it takes practice. But, you know, we want to see people following standardized work. We mentioned, you know, leader standard work, but we also have standard work for our operators or our frontline. And they should have their daily routines as well, which should include problem solving, continuous improvement, and self-development, right? So you want to make sure that we're following that and supporting that structure to make sure that there's clear structured approaches to our leadership tasks, including how we coach, mentor, and ensure adherence to our quality principles in our standard work. And then I mentioned problem solving quite a bit, but that's the other piece that the leaders can do as they're out on their, you know, their GIMBA walks or as part of their day is include some time for problem solving. I mentioned coaching and development. This also, you know, puts us in an opportunity to really help and in some cases challenge our employees or team members to take on new tasks, to see opportunities for development. And to make sure that we're being proactive in action with our quality. And I also mentioned already about, you know, the visual management and using that as really an indicator of how we're doing as an organization. But it can also be an opportunity to do a little breakout and say, okay, let's think about this. What's happening here? And do we need to take a different approach? So the visual management can really be a trigger for opportunities to identify improvements, but it can also be an opportunity to recognize planned predictable performance. Just this week, we had a red metric that's been red for some time. It turned green for 2 weeks in a row. We celebrated that this week because it's been a real effort by the team making small incremental improvements over time, and now they're starting to manifest. And we should celebrate the green just as much as we celebrate the red.
Yeah. Yeah. And but how in I totally agree with everything you say there. But often I find with our leaders, they're absolutely game on for all of this to be done onto everyone else in the organization.
Yeah.
And when they realize the level of effort that we're asking them, what active sponsorship looks like, it's not just putting, you know, a budget together. It's not just, you know, doing a couple of town halls. It actually is their daily routine means they have to get, they can't dial it in. They have to get out from behind their computer and their desk and they have to go to where the work is. That doesn't necessarily mean they may not be on a site that is doing frontline work, you know, manufacturing or laboratory work, but they can still go to where the logistics and supply team are working, or they can go to where the quality team are working, or, you know, many others, and see what the issues are and how performance is. But getting them to actually recognize that and fold that into their daily, bake it into their DNA of their daily routines, I have found that that is one of the biggest challenges, is really getting that to stick. And it's fine if you can come across leaders who are already passionate about the role of culture. But if you can't, you know, if particularly, you know, if you're in an organization where schedule adherence and, you know, getting batches out is a big driver, sometimes it's get it done rather than get it right is the mantra. And, you know, that can drive all the wrong behaviors and can be very divisive. Have you come across that and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes back to the clarity, consistency and connectivity, you know, aspect of, you know, leading leaders, right? Mm. So leaders are like anybody else in the organization, changes hard. And we're talking about behavioral changes here. So a lot of our behaviors are hardwired from previous experience, previous companies. When we talk about quality culture, not everybody's coming from a learning organization, a continuous improvement organization. So we have to realize it's a change. So we have to think about change management as we're doing that. And again, the clarity of the expectations, the consistency in following up with your people leaders to make sure that they're walking the talk, that they're doing their leader standard work is paramount. So yeah. I know we put it as the third enabler, but it is the most critical.
Yeah.
Leaders and their behaviors, their actions, their words matter in an organization. If you're really trying to transform your organization to be more proactive, to have a continuous improvement culture, to be more engaging, you have to have the buy-in of the leaders so they can role model and they can reinforce and they can coach. So yeah, it is a challenge. And I would just say that, you know, make sure that you take the time to be very clear on expectations. You take the time to follow up and make sure that it's happening and that you continue to explain the why. Because it's absolutely critical that they role model, you know, the culture that you want to see. If you want growth mindset, they have to promote a growth mindset. They have to react to new ideas with a growth mindset. Because if they say it and then their reactions are, oh my God, the metrics are red and let's it's a failure and this and that, rather than seeing it as an opportunity, you know, it'll stifle the growth of the organization. So I would say that the biggest thing, Nuala, is really you've got to win the hearts and the minds of your people leaders. Now you can start these cultural changes in areas. And they can become contagious. So I'm not saying that you have to have everybody in the organization all on the same boat, but within an organization, you have to have the leaders within that organization on the same page, working in concert. And the more aligned it is, the more impact you're going to have with the people, and the easier it's going to be for the leaders.
So, I'm with you on that. I like to start, if we can't get everyone on board, and that often happens if, you know, either the CEO or, you know, the leader of the alpha in the room is not completely convinced, then find a lighthouse area that you can go and shine the light and then demonstrate the benefits and then, you know, seek as Bob Sutton and Huggy Rao say in their Scaling Excellence book, seek to spread the excellence from the few to the many, you know, and get it contagious.
Yeah, I think one of the things, you know, we discovered as we were doing our work on quality culture previously was that, you know, the number one driver of culture is really by the individual.
Yeah.
You know, the quality culture really is at the individual level. It's whether the individual takes pride in their work and they, you know, they understand why they're doing what they're doing. That's really where the magic happens, right? It's winning the hearts and the mind of the individual. But these other things, the other enablers, you know, are things that will help support the program and get more people moving. So yeah, it's a big task, but I would just say anybody that's starting out, you don't have to have the big bang approach. A lot of times people will say, well, I can't do anything because the C-suite's not doing it. Mm-hmm. I really like the idea that you can influence from anywhere in the organization. Maxwell has a book out, you know, the 360 degree leader. Yeah. Basically, you can lead from anywhere in an organization, any direction. And so I always say, be the change you want to see in the world. You know, my team will sometimes say, well, why are we doing this and not everybody else is doing this? I say, because it's the right thing to do for our patients.
So I loved that. I found that discussion you had on accountability as a team sport particularly thought-provoking because, you know, from a risk management and a risk-based decision-making perspective in particular, clarity of accountability is foundational. It's if it's unclear who owns a risk, well, in my mind, is it being managed? It is just being observed, perhaps. So when roles and responsibilities around risk aren't explicitly defined and agreed, then decisions get delayed or, worse again, perhaps diluted. So embedding that accountability into standard work, not just for actions, but also for risk ownership, for decision ownership, perhaps that will help ensure that mitigation isn't optional and that early signals are not just noticed, but are acted upon. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And that's, it's that old one of, you know, mistaking talk for action. You know, we have a lot of meetings, there's a lot of decisions. It takes a long time to get to the decision. And then does that actually translate into the actions? You know, even when you look at risk assessments, all the work that goes into identifying where the risk controls are, and then the minimal amount of work that goes to check, have those risk controls been implemented as intended? And are we reviewing that they're fit for their intended purpose? So, yeah, translating that into actions is really important. And, you know, of the three enablers that Matt shared, I really felt that the last one is the most influential one from my experience. It's that application of leader standard work. And it, of course, inevitably, this means changing the way our leaders run the business on a daily basis. And very often when, you know, in the work that I do around culture change and when we talk about engaging the bottom line or the front line to improve on the bottom line, very often the leaders are all gung-ho for that. Yet those frontline people should definitely change the way they're doing their daily work. Oh, you mean I also have to change the way I do my daily work? That's not always where they're comfortable with. So I loved what Matt was saying about setting the expectation every batch, every day, leading by example every day, coaching and Gemba several times a week, measuring what matters, and taking actions based on the progress you're making or not making. And all of these are game changers in terms of delivering real performance improvement on a sustainable basis. And it's about getting the leaders to recognize that that change in their leader standard work, which is folded in every day, is really where the competitive advantage comes from, that turns that organization into that agile, flexible, you know, resilient organization that they hope to lead.
Absolutely. There was so much to think about and reflect on there. But look, a key takeaway for me was something you both said. Standard work isn't about rigid procedures. It's about clarity and consistency in judgment, and that means having shared criteria for what constitutes a real and material risk, you know, so the decisions made aren't hoc. And no doubt these themes will continue to be discussed across all of our proactive risk management topics in future episodes. So a big thank you to you and to Matt for sharing his time and effort, and to you for interviewing him. So as usual, we'll be back each month on a range of topics with a mix of guest interviews, quarterly roundups of what's new, and our book club, which is coming up, where we hope to share some of our favourite authors and our favourite books in the areas of critical thinking, risk science, leadership, and human behaviour as we continue to search for learning and strengthen our risk-based approaches. Listen, please do subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. That way new episodes will miraculously make their way to your feed. We have also set up a Risk Revolution podcast LinkedIn page. So please do join us there and feel free to message us, share your thoughts and ideas on past and future episodes. Most importantly, thank you for listening. Final words, Nuala, what are you sharing in the show notes this month?
Yeah, we'll provide a link to that report that myself and Matt co-led, the ISP Cultural Excellence Report. Still got lots of little gems in there. And we'll link to Carol Dweck's mindset book on that growth mindset, and also to our own Shane Craddock's website and all of his resources. And he also has a podcast as well. But it's a source of where all his content is available, and it's very much in this space. So happy researching and learning more about all the opportunities out there to grow in the quality space. So it's goodbye from Nuala.
And goodbye from Val.